This is 2FM's Game On.
Hello there, good evening and welcome to the show. Big thanks to Demi and Mikey for driving us through the afternoon. It is Wednesday, October 8th. I'm Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and the new music show at 7pm, Keith Tracy continues our build-up to Ireland's World Cup qualifier against Portugal, and we'll get the thoughts from Ireland assistant coach John O'Shea speaking to the media today. Ellen Keane is with us to look back on the incredible career of Shane Ryan, and we'll hear from Irish swimming superstar Roisin Ní Riain. Plus, Damien Lawler has the latest GAA news. As always, you can have your say by texting 51552, WhatsApp 0871879200, or find us on X at GameOn2FM.
This is 2FM's Game On.
This is 2FM's Game On indeed. Good evening, welcome to the show, Keith Tracy. How are we? Are we in positive form? Looking forward to the weekend, looking forward to the big World Cup qualifier, full of enthusiasm.
I'm looking forward to the weekend. I'm looking forward to a lot of things, but not particularly the Ireland against Portugal game, if I'm being completely honest.
We will preview that in detail and get your honest take on that. Ellen Keane will be speaking swimming in detail later. You were speaking to Roisin Ní Riain, a superstar.
I was, yeah. Such a good conversation. It's so strange kind of being on the other side of it now and getting to chat to not only my old teammates, but seeing them excel. So it was a really lovely conversation. But I'm really excited for her.
Yeah, the future is bright. She's only 20.
Only 20. Yeah.
5 medals.
Yeah, and she is currently probably studying in UL right now. So she never stops. She never gets a break.
Well, we'll be chatting swimming at about 20 to 7. So drop her a text there and she'll be able to hear her with her interview at 20 to 7. We will return to swimming. We're going to chat to Damien Lawler as well. But Keith Tracy, let us focus on association football, Portugal against Ireland. Let's hear from John O'Shea, actually, assistant manager. John O'Shea was giving a squad update earlier today.
Evan took part in pretty much all the training today, so really good. Troy's been excellent as well since he's showed up, which is fantastic news as well. What we're seeing is very positive. You know, everything, the strength and the power and the speed that he has is good to see. So he's obviously, like Troy has been doing the last few years, he's been leading, he's doing everything right on and off the pitch to be the best professional he can, and that's led to him possibly getting back that bit quicker from an injury that could have kept him out for longer too. So brilliant to see, and obviously he was getting the rewards before the injury too. So as I said, listen, the type of character he is in the group as well, and anyone that has that kind of attacking talent is going to be very important for us.
When you look at the double header, is the Armenia game the more important one? Every footballer I know, you always talk about one game at a time. But we have to restore pride at the very least against Armenia, don't we?
Ah, listen, we have to have a better window than the last one. It's as simple as that. We know that. And first up is a chance against, listen, any squad that's selected, and then any team that's selected to play against Portugal knows the challenge that they face. What happens will happen, and then we obviously face Armenia. But first and foremost is to make sure we're putting in a more Irish performance, especially. I think that's the key aspect for us to face Portugal.
What are your reflections of the Armenia game now?
Yeah, listen, we have to. It's one of them. Like, it's something that you're not planning on happening. We weren't expecting it. So when it does, it's obviously a bit of a shock to the system, and everyone was absolutely gutted, knowing we weren't expecting it. And that's where we have to show that reaction now. We have to get back. And like I said, have a better window than the last one. Like everything, after every camp, every window, whether it's 2 games, 3 games, you look back on the learnings from it. Simple as that. And we know we have to do a lot better. When we have, like we've mentioned, there's been signs of progress. And that, and then you have a moment like that in a game where it's so crucial that you take something from it. And we know we can't afford to have moments like that now going forward for the rest of the campaign. That's the big one that we have to show. And especially, what a chance to show it against Portugal away in Lisbon. That we need to have more togetherness in the team, the squad, in the sense of sticking together. There's going to be tough moments in Portugal. We're going to have a spell where they're going to have the ball for a bit. We're going to be under pressure, so we're going to have to stick together, stick through that, defend collectively that team, and then you have that threat to cause Portugal problems as well.
I suspect there's going to be a lot of tough moments and difficult moments and periods and spells in the game. And John O'Shea references a more Irish performance. Is there an Irish performance in this group? Do they have the resilience to show that?
Yeah, I'm not too sure. To be honest with you, Shane, I prefer us playing against the bigger nations than I do against the so-called lower nations. I feel we really, really struggle when the emphasis is on us to go and break down the lower team. So against Portugal, I ultimately think we lose the game. I've seen odds as far as 18-1 for us to go and win in Lisbon. So it's going to be really, really difficult with the amount of players that Portugal have. In the last two World Cup qualifiers, they've scored 8 goals already. The 40-year-old Ronaldo has scored 3 goals. Cancelo has 2 goals and 2 assists. And he looked like somebody that was probably not going to be in the Portuguese team for too much longer when he went to Al Hilal. But he's reached another level again. And yeah, look, in our last 10 competitive games, Shane, we've 4 wins. We've only kept 1 clean sheet. And we failed to score on 5 occasions, and now all of a sudden we're going away to Portugal, and you want to be enthusiastic about it. You want to look forward to it. But Armenia's XG against Ireland, Shane, was 2.45. Armenia's XG against Portugal was 0.19, and Armenia's XG against Faroe Islands was 1.22. And the reason I reference all that is to just show how easy it is to play against this Irish team when Armenia are getting an XG of 2.45 against you. Mm. You really, really are struggling. If that's what the Armenian front line are doing to our Irish back line, can you imagine what the Portuguese front line are capable of?
Was that, to try and clutch at some positivity, could you say that was a once-off, that we have put it up to Portugal in the past? We were a couple of injury time goals from Cristiano Ronaldo away from getting a heroic result.
So, yeah, we went to Portugal and nearly won. I'm not sure how long we can bang that drum for. You know, we did really, really well. We defended well for long periods, but nobody remembers a valiant loss. And look, if you offered it to me now, I'd probably take it because, you know, a lot of these Portuguese players, I think Nuno Mendes is probably the best left back in the world. Ronaldo's probably still up there as one of the best goal scorers in the world.
So is there a fear this could get very ugly?
Yeah, I honestly think that's the first part of the goal for Ireland is let's not let this get too embarrassing, because if Portugal click, Shane, it could get embarrassing. They are really, really good. They're tipped to go really deep in World Cups, in European qualification, in European Championships. They're tipped to go very, very deep. So look, I don't know if we lose this game 2-0. And the one thing that I always hated, and very rarely was this ever the case in the dressing room I was in, but when you're playing against a team and you know, even if all 11 of our players turn up and are a 9 out of 10 on average, we could still get beat. And that's just the reality of the situation. But it goes back to the first two games. We've only ourselves to blame for being in this situation and needing a result in Portugal so early on.
If you're a player, do you try and park those games, and particularly the Armenia performance and result, or do you want to carry that with you to carry that hurt and harness it into motivation? Not that there should be any extra motivation needed when you put on a green jersey.
I think if personally for me it would be motivating me, because it was so lackluster, and the Hungary game, the first half was a joke. 2-0 down in the blink of an eye, give us an absolute mountain to climb. And people are saying, well, we reacted really well, we got ourselves back into the game. I'm still not quite sure that goes our way. And I know we only got a draw against Hungary. I'm still not quite sure we get that draw if Hungary keep 11 men on the pitch. And the Armenia result, you know, speaks for itself. Could have easily been 3-1. The goal was chalked off. I mean, you know, a toenail offside towards the end. And as I said, I've already referenced the XG. When our back line, and people are telling me, you know, O'Brien, Collins, O'Shea, Colm, and all these lads are brilliant centre-halves, we don't keep clean sheets. 1 clean sheet in our last 10 competitive games, Shane, and it's just not good enough.
What do you make of the return of Seamus Coleman and John Egan as well?
I find the Seamus coming back, I've absolutely no problem with. I'd have had him in the last squad.
Even for leadership, even if he's not going to get game time.
There's very few people in this Irish team that have tasted relative success, and I'm not talking about winning the World Cup for Ireland. I'm talking about winning a couple of games here or there for Ireland. Seamus has done that. Seamus has been in the trenches for a long, long time, and we lack leaders. We really, really lack leaders. And I know people are saying all Keith ever bangs on about is clean sheets. The reason I'm not banging on about the middle of the pitch is because I don't feel we have anything in there. There's nothing more for us to give in there. Very, very limited talent in there. At the top end of the park, we've got Troy Parra, who's hitting a bit of form and playing really well.
How crucial is the fitness of both Troy and indeed Evan, who's carrying a knock?
Well, they're massive, and Troy is one that I'm a little bit worried about. Troy played no football in September. He's played 20 minutes in October so far, and he's coming into the Irish team, and through Irish eyes we're all being selfish, thinking we need you to play, we need you to score goals, right? You might not be 100%, but we need you, Troy. And obviously Ferguson is doing really well at Roma, hasn't quite hit the back of the net as we would like him to, but his build up play is brilliant. But the top end are young, the middle of the park we've very, very little resources, and at the back, Shane, I think we can improve. We should be able to improve. As I say, 2.45 against Armenia, one clean sheet in 10, when the majority of our back lads, including Queevy and Kelleher, the goalkeeper, they're all mostly playing in the Premier League. I know O'Shea and Manning aren't quite there now, but they've played in the Premier League in the past. They are Premier League players. They've got a lot of caps, and it's time that we start shutting people out and being really, really hard to play against. And I think that's what John O'Shea means when he says a real Irish performance, a gutsy one that, you know, I think as a coach or a manager or even as a player, I would hate people coming off the pitch thinking that was too easy.
Well, we need a big performance. 10 years to the day since Shane Long scored that winner against the world champions Germany in the Viva Stadium.
It's hairs just on the back of the neck stuff, isn't it?
And even when you go through those, even off the top of your head, like Jason McAteer against the Netherlands, Roy Keane against Portugal, kind of carrying that Irish team over the line, not even going too far back to the 90s, but even those kind of big performances, it's like a world away now.
Yeah, it is, and it's so far away. And
is that like a characters, or is that unfair on the team? Because it's not for want of a will. Like they want to win, they want to perform, they want to play well for Ireland.
Yeah, I think it's a whole host of things. I think on the middle of the pitch, I don't want to keep, you know, talking down about the lads, but in the middle of the park, I think we can all agree that we're lacking in there in terms of somebody who can play on the half turn and
well even
you
look at the squad that was announced, like Will Smallbone, Josh Cullen, Jack Taylor, Jason Lumby, Finn Azaz. So no Jason Knight, obviously out injured, and I suppose you've wingers that could be classified as midfielders, but that as a whole would your concerns be increased more than usual?
And even like I know you asked me about John Egan coming back in. I've nothing personally about John Egan coming back into the squad is absolutely fine, but when you look at the amount of centre halves we have, even Coleman can play centre half, O'Brien can play centre half, so you're up at around four or five centre halves now. And when you think, oh, John Egan's got back into the squad, okay, he must be really ripping up the championship at the minute. Hull, I think, are 15th in the championship at the minute. They've conceded 16 goals in 9 games. They've kept one clean sheet in the league. So where does John Egan come into? Because a lot of people, we have a lot of Premier League centre halves. We've got O'Shea doing well at Ipswich. You've got Manning doing well at Southampton. So why are we shoehorning another centre half in who, for my mind, he's not going to play? He's just going to make up the numbers in training. Why not give the experience to a younger kid that we might think, do you know what, Portugal are beating us 5-0. We put him on for 10 minutes, blood him a little bit with a view.
Is there anyone on the periphery, though?
Not that I can think of, to be honest. And I get your point that why not give it to John Egan if we've nobody on the periphery at the top end of the pitch. But there's got to be somebody. There has to be somebody. I know Will Ferry has come back, is coming in for the first time. He was originally born in Bury in England. He's played for the Irish under 18s, 19s and 21s. But again, he's a fullback. And when you're looking at the calibre of player that Portugal have, and you're looking at the calibre of player we're bringing in, Will Ferry has played for Crawley in League 2, Cheltenham in League 1, and he's played, I think, 50-odd games in the Scottish Premiership for Dundee. It's you know, it's going to be a real, real tough night. But I do take Tony's question there. I do think the Armenia game is one I'm looking at and thinking,
is that more important?
I think so, yeah. Because Armenia are more in and around our level, and the game that, you know, we played away in Yerevan was just totally, totally disheartening. I whatever about the Hungary game, I think they're a little bit better than us on paper. But the Armenian one is where you're thinking, go and flex your muscles. But as I say, I think that's when we really struggle, Shane, when we're told, get the ball down, play football, open teams up and see what you can do. That's when we really, really struggle. And for all the evolution and all the change of players, I still think we only look dangerous when we cross the ball. Only when we whip the ball in do we
Or these long throws. Are we going to see, like, inverted commas, long throws? Are we going to see that again?
I have no problem with this type of thing, and I know people are probably rolling their eyes. Sam Allardyce,
well, I don't think there's an issue with the long throws, but I think how Ireland utilises them isn't exactly the definition of a Roy de Lapp.
Yeah.
Or what we see perhaps Keith Andrews implementing with Brentford. It's not as effective. It's not putting opposition goalkeepers under too much pressure.
But this, I think this is the problem with the Irish team. Where does our real strengths? What are opposition teams fearing when they come to the Aviva? Very little. We can't keep the ball. We don't score an awful lot of goals, and we'll give you a chance to score a goal. So even if it was Ireland are really, really difficult to break down, and I tell you what, from set pieces, they will ask a lot of questions. People don't want to play in them games. Modern day defenders don't want to play in them games. Yeah, we shy away from that type of thing and think, well, the rest of Europe is playing a lovely brand of football. Why can't we do that? We're going to be chasing our tails for a long, long time. And by the time we get on the same level as the rest of Europe, I fear the style of football will have changed again. So why not just lock in what we're good at, keep doing it, and when teams come to the Aviva, make them feel really, really under pressure and see what we can get from there. Because, as I say, there's no point getting down with the tactics, because it's all about want, will and desire, as I think the last 20 minutes against Armenia showed, when we just looked so leggy and bereft of any type of get up and get after them. It just thought, we're looking at the lads thinking, this is a World Cup qualifier. You know, Heimir Hagmarsson, when he got the job, was referencing this date and these games as being the biggest thing that Ireland have. And yet the last 20 minutes against Armenia, when we need a goal, we looked lacklustre at best.
Yeah, looked very leggy, I think, is, and that's being generous, that's being kind. How will Heimir approach it then? Will it be anything different than what we've seen in this campaign? Because it is such a short campaign coming so quick, this group of matches and then a couple in November.
It's really difficult from a managerial point of view. If you want to change, you want to try and reinvent the wheel, you want to do something else. A lot of the lads are coming in, having played games with knocks, and you won't get an awful lot of time on the training ground with them. Personally, Shane, I would go to a 5-3-2 and I would just lock down the middle of the park. I would tell the two wing backs that they're going to have to engage in the wing, because Portugal do score an awful lot of goals from crossing the ball. I know Cristiano Ronaldo is still floating around in there. So
the first billionaire footballer,
first
confirmed
billionaire
today.
Footballer, yeah. But yeah. Is he happy? Is he happy though, Shane? That's the main question, isn't it? I'm sure he's happy enough, to be fair. But look, it's one of those. I don't think you can talk about formations. I really think a lot of this game is just going to be about trying to nullify the Portuguese, because if they get into a rhythm and they're going to be up near 70% possession, we've proven over the last couple of years that we're nowhere near good enough out of possession to restrict the Portuguese for long enough. So it's going to be really difficult, but yeah, I think 5-3 and maybe 2 up top, and just try and play for set pieces, try and hold the ball up and just make it really, really dirty and ugly, and see if the Portuguese want to rise to that type of game.
51552 is the text number. Good win today for Paula Sams Ireland in a Euro under 17 qualifier against Kosovo. Plenty of League of Ireland Academy talent on show. And we discussed yesterday as well about the 3 million budget towards League of Ireland Academy. So hopefully that will create more positivity around Irish football. Armenia game is more important, says the texter. Keep Ferguson and Parrott fresh for that. You ask about what opposition teams might be afraid of or I suppose, not afraid is the wrong word, especially when it comes to this Ireland team, but a fully fit marauding Evan Ferguson, would that not give you food for thought?
It would, but again, if I want to be really, really harsh on Evan, he doesn't score an awful lot of goals. So although his build-up play is really good at Roma, I think if you're a centre-half and you think, okay, don't let him turn, don't let him get involved in the build-up play.
Needs support though.
He does need an awful lot of support. That's why I think it has to be a two. And I think if Troy Parrott bangs on Heimir Hallgrimsson's door and says, look, I should be starting, he really should, with the amount of goals he's already scored in the European competitions for AZ. Ferguson playing at Roma, I think he's pretty much undroppable. We don't have a lot of players playing at the top level in Italy, or the top level anywhere in the world this particular time. So I would play with a two up front. I would tell the 5-3, don't move. Don't use to try and keep a clean sheet. Whack the ball up to Evan and Troy, and you one
but
or two would be
it's
allowed
been
off the
leash. Lapses in concentration.
It has.
That's been so frustrating, kind of watching these teams, that these players that are playing at the Premier League high level, or Nathan Collins making it, it's just putting in a 90-minute performance of just being solid and together, having that unified approach.
And I get that. I really do get that. It's the basic mistakes. But people say to me, oh, well, Nathan Collins is not the Nathan Collins that plays for Brentford. And I've done a couple of Brentford games on a Sunday over the last couple of commentaries. Made a very bad mistake against Manchester United when he pulled back in Buemo. Should have been sent off. Yeah. There was a game just before that where he's wrestling with a player and he lets it bounce in his own 6-yard box. There's a bit of pinball in the box and it ends up in the back of the net. And these are the basic mistakes that Nathan makes for Ireland. And you're thinking, well, if it's happening at Brentford, of course it's happening at Ireland, but maybe at Brentford he's got somewhat better players around him, he doesn't get punished as much and he takes a couple of more chances. But it's got to be the most simplistic game plan. Nathan, you're a very good defender, you read the game really well, but when you have it, do not risk the ball whatsoever unless it's 70 yards away from our goal and you're whacking it into the channel, because the amount of times the ball gets turned over in our half, Shane, and you know, you're giving the Portuguese a leg up somewhere they don't need a leg up. They're good enough to open you up. You don't need to help them.
They most certainly are. Okay, we're going to have to leave the conversation there. Not sold on the XG now, Keith. Spot on though, and shut up shop. Don't concede. They should fear physical crosses. Get balls in the box, says the texter. Do we have a chance of qualifying if we somehow pick up a point in Lisbon? Do you have any hopes of qualification still?
No, zero.
Even if you pick up a point in Lisbon?
Even if you pick up a point. Well, I'll ask you, Shane, because I'm very pessimistic and I realise if we beat Portugal,
I'll go toe for toe with you with pessimism. You've asked me about Shelburne's hopes in the past, okay? You know where I stand on this. Perhaps if we get a point, it would be the most Irish thing that we'll get a point and then lose on Tuesday in Aviva, and that's a bigger fear, but however. We're going to have to leave it there. Roberto Lopez's Cape Verde must wait for their final Group D game if they are to qualify for the 2026 FIFA World Cup after a 3-3 draw with Libya this afternoon in Tripoli. The Shamrock Rovers defender scored an own goal in just the second minute as his side found themselves 3-1 down with an hour gone. So we might have a League of Ireland representative at the World Cup if they can pull that out of the bag. We shall see. Okay, Alan Colley will be with us tomorrow to continue our football conversation. We're going to have to leave it there for today. Keith Tracy, thank you for popping in. Ellen Keane is still with us. We're going to hear from Roisin Irín later. But up after the break, Damien Lawler is standing by with all the latest GA news.
Game on.
Hurling.
Now, Damien Lawler joins us with the latest GAA news stories. And Damien, we are going to begin our conversation speaking about hurling, because we were speaking about the budget, of course, yesterday and how it affects sport. How does it affect hurling in particular, Damien Lawler?
Yeah, they were looking for a couple of million, Shane. When I say they, the GAA were looking for a couple of million off the government to grow hurling, I suppose, to develop hurling in non-traditional areas. And maybe to take more of a statement like grip on the game. For the government to do so. But they got an allocation yesterday of just under €750,000. And I think that money will be, it's going to go in a few different areas. The likes of the new head of hurling, Willie Maher, and his team work very, very hard in the games development team to secure that funding. And the target now is to grow the number of hurling units by 30 per year for the next 5 years. They want to bring the game into over 2,000 primary schools as well. So this year they're going okay. 45 new hurling units have started, and another 75 clubs got an investment of 95,000. So the money will be very, very well used. And I think that the GAA feels now that there's an opportunity there for both themselves and the government to kind of sustain Gaelic games, and in doing so, support rural Ireland, give youth games and kind of balance regional development as well. So an ongoing thing will be kind of providing game opportunities for players, not your typical traditional game, Shane, but maybe cross-border leagues, regionalisation, club support, development, and basically cultivating the culture and heritage of the game. I think there's an overall view that the game of hurling is something special. It's unique to Ireland. There's a cultural impact to it. And this money came true anyway. 750,000, it was less than what the GAA wanted. But there is seeds of promise that it could be the start of a regular investment in such area as well. And earlier on today, then, I spoke to Down Hurling manager Ronan Sheehan. So Ronan's come through the system from Kelty Challenge under 14 all the way up through inter-county senior management. He's had a good innings in charge of the job. He's brought Down back to the top flight in the league hurling for the first time since 2007. He's seen the ropes right across the board. And as we'll hear now, Shane, he's overall welcomes the development, but he has two concerns. Where exactly the money will go and who will kind of direct the strategic direction of the funding.
Damien, I suppose the positive news overall, the fact that any investment in the game is very welcome. I think a couple of critical things. One is that Willie has control over how the money is spent and where the money is directed. I think there also needs to be some thought into what defines a traditional area. You know, Killarney is not a traditional area in Kerry, although Kerry has traditional areas. You know, so we shouldn't miss out that middle tier. You know, Carlow, we should be looking at Carlow Town and those areas where they have a big population. You know, could some of that money be directed there? It can't just be as simple as we're going to direct all the money towards a Cavan or a Monaghan or a Sligo or whatever the teams that are in the Larry Maher or the Nicky Record. I think it needs to be more balanced. And the fact that some of this money can be used to strengthen the middle tier counties by focusing on those areas within those middle tier counties where there is significant opportunity to grow, but traditionally they have not had any significant presence for the game at this point. But overall, really positive. And I think that, you know, it's a sign that the government have committed to the special status of the game, and that we now need to build on that in future years and also ensure that the GAA matches that commitment as well. So if the government have given us extra money, is there extra money to be diverted from the association in general to support the work that Willie and his team are doing? But I think one of the critical things is, you know, how much control will Willie have over that budget?
Down hurling manager Ronan Sheehan speaking there. Damien, sticking on the topic of grants and indeed the budget, will the GPA be happy with how yesterday played out?
Yeah, I think they'll be reasonably happy, Shane. You know, they've got an increase of 28% in state funding, and that's been described as a strong result by the GPA. But, you know, I think they want the overall contribution from the government to boost the player fund to rise up to 10 million euro. And they're a little bit off that at the moment. I suppose there probably were 5.6 million. But still, it means that an average player grant will go up by about 330 euro. It'll go up from about maybe 1,470 euro up to 1,800 euro. And I think that the increase in 28% of funding now brings the total player fund up to 7.2 million. So that's a strong result for the GPA. They did campaign and did lobby quite hard. And I suppose they cited the kind of recognition of the contribution that inter-county players make to the Irish economy and society. They brought out a report, commissioned that a good 6 to 9 months ago, I think. They had meetings with the Minister, Patrick O'Donovan. He reaffirmed his commitment to working with players over the lifetime of the government. But I think the GPA will keep going on this. I think they have a target of 10 million in annual player funding to reach. And, you know, they feel that will put them in line with other elite sports athletes in this country. So it is significant. And if anybody out there is lucky enough or grateful enough to have availed of the maybe slight drop in university fees, I heard anecdotal evidence that maybe a couple of players, their fees had dropped by 500, you know, which is probably needed right across the board. But if you're getting that maybe and you're getting an increase in your player grant as well, it's small gains, and it's significant gains too if you're still in college, because every penny counts. It's hard times out there for players, you know, especially those in college, Shane. Many people can't afford digs. They're travelling over and back. You know, we've heard the difficult nature facing students. And then you're throwing in an insatiable appetite to improve yourself as an intercounty hurler or footballer on top of that. So I think it's only right myself from an intercounty player's perspective, because I know exactly what they put into it. And, you know, I suppose their minds are preoccupied with hurling and football for as long as they're in those squads.
OK, that's the financial side of things. Listen, last weekend, Special GAA Congress ratified all 62 motions on the programme, a lot centred around the FRC and real changes in football. Yeah. And we saw how dissent in football is being dealt with. But I'm right in saying there's going to be a particular look at dissent in hurling.
Yeah, I suppose a lot of this came into play, Shane, in that, you know, a black card could now be awarded for a technical foul, pulling the jersey to deny a goal-scoring opportunity, and that's going to switch down to club level as well. You know, so you probably have a black card coming into Gaelic football then at club level, and you might necessarily have the equivalent in either game. But now I think the Hurling Development Committee, they've been busy quite lately. They're going to propose to Central Council next month that a player who shows any dissent at all to the awarding of a free would be punished more severely. And I think that they're probably to recommend that the game adopts a sterner dissent rule, and that's probably similar to the one that's been introduced to Gaelic football. And I think also, and then, you know, the HGC, Shane, are looking for to consider the potential removal of the All-Ireland preliminary quarterfinals from next year onwards. So I do think that while this year was primarily focused on the Football Development Committee and tightening the rules and making the game much more of a better spectacle, I do think now that the hurling disciplinary and dissent body is going to have to tighten its rules as well, because it probably is a bit mad that you have it in one code and not the other. So it definitely is going to be the case. And the removal of the All-Ireland prelim quarterfinals, if that happens, it'll be no great surprise either, Shane. Only once in 10 years, Eddie Brennan's Laois beating Dublin, was there any sort of a shock really, you know? So I think when fixtures, a space is badly needed in the calendar, that is one that could be removed, I think, without too much argument.
Okay. Also at Special Congress, GAA President Charlotte Burns outlined his next round of pressing engagements, one of which will be engagement with the Amateur Status Committee. Now, Janet Burns has spoken about this in the past, about trying to bring radical proposals to next year's meeting, but will there be appetite for true change?
Ooh, great question. And I'd say on the ground, there might be some appetite, but not enough to get this through. So what the president promised there, and he spoke at Central Congress last Saturday, as you mentioned, Shane, the proposal is going to be radical. He said that they want to achieve something that makes it easier for county players to play the game and live their lives as well, and to make it easier for county boards having teams who play at the highest level. So they went out and got feedback, a lot of varied views on what amateur status means to players and counties. But he was saying like that if they're going to have to be serious in a way, you have to look at what it takes to be an amateur athlete playing at the highest level in 2026. He met with county board chair people as well, and got all their feedback. But the bottom line too, Shane, is if a manager calls training for 3 nights a week and 2 nights in the gym session, and you know the protocol is there that it's only 2 nights a week on the field and 2 in the gym, what are the punishments for any manager who breaks that? Are county boards going to be strong enough to stop them from going ahead, maybe operating 5 nights a week? Because the other 2 nights are probably rest and recovery and nutrition as well. Mm. So I think it's a 7-night-a-week job. The issue of payments for managers in some official capacity has been brought forward. I do feel myself, if you can review the clock back to COVID years, where a template was set forward for county boards at a time where hardly anybody was allowed into the grounds, whereby you were allowed one doctor, one physio, one stats person, 3 mentors, and maybe only 1 or 2 others. The backroom team was fully 10, and that the, you know, county boards had no income coming in back then. So everything was official mileage, everything was officially done. So that is one possibility that an extended version of that or a stretched version of that might come back in. But I think what the president is basically saying is that counties are, you know, in the hamster wheel trying to bring money in. They're putting on so many fundraising events, and that money runs out very, very quickly. And we're in a situation now where counties are spending 2 million plus on their teams per year. And that's not really going to, that's not sustainable, really, you know, at a time whereby, you know, the cost of living has gone through the roof and everything has gone sky high. So, yeah, the president has promised serious radical proposals, and I look forward to seeing what they are and hopefully be able to find out a few of them before it comes to Congress next year. And I think there's probably a lot of stuff that can be done. But as you say, Shane, who actually has the appetite to drive this through? Don't get me wrong. I think there's a survey gone out to GAA members as well. That went out maybe last summer. And I think, you know, enforcing the values of the association is one thing, but the GAA president admitted on Saturday at Crow Park that it might be one area of the presidency that mightn't work out the way he wants, because he doubted himself over whether there being true appetite to get this through. But the bottom line is total inter-county spending for 2024 was up around the 45 million mark, and it shows no signs of abating. And I think more than 3 counties came in at over 2 million team expenditure. So somebody has to shout stop in some shape or form, Shane, because that's not sustainable.
Okay. Listen, Damien, before we let you go, it's been a couple of weeks now since you and I were chatting about the latest Gaelic Games news here on the show. And I know it hasn't happened in the past week, but I do have to give it a special mention. I don't know now if you've ever covered the Asian Gaelic Games, but it's been...
No.
It's growing, I must say. And on the 20th of September, Orang Era took part in a Gaelic Games exhibition game in Malaysia's National Stadium, becoming the first Gaelic football club to play men's, ladies and kids Gaelic games in a national stadium outside of Ireland. So just a massive credit. It is great to see the spread of Gaelic football and indeed hurling, ladies football, camogie and even underage football and hurling as well, spreading across the Asian Gaelic Games as well. So massive credit to Orang Era and Cian Hullum, a former member of Nafina here in Dublin as well. So you can get more information at Malaysia GA on Twitter and all social media on that. So nice to see a bit of history being made there. But for now, Damien Lawler, listen, thank you as always. Great chatting, and we'll speak to you again soon.
Game on. Swimming.
Now, Alan Keenan is still with us as we return to swimming. We were speaking at the top of the show, Ellen, about Roisin Nureen and a successful World Para Swimming Championships in Singapore a couple of weeks ago. So first major championships of the LA cycle, five-person squad for Team Ireland, two debutants lining up in 15 events, producing eight personal bests, an impressive seven medals. And the impressive Roisin Nureen was leading the charge with all these medals. Five medals?
Five medals.
Incredible.
Three silver and two bronze. Yeah, she's an unbelievable athlete. I think Roisin started to show what she was capable of very early on in her career. And then last year at the Paralympic Games, she won one silver and one bronze medal at the ripe old age of 20. So it was very exciting. It's a very exciting cycle for Roisin. Mm-hmm. Roisin, kind of towards the end of my career now, I was a teammate of Roisin's only whenever we were away and competing and training together abroad. But I always found Roisin gave me so much motivation and so much inspiration because she is such a hard worker. She loves putting the miles in. And the thing about how many events she does as well is that she needs that fitness. So she needs to be able to do that many meters. Like she's ranking up like so many meters when she's training during the week. She trains in the High Performance Centre in Limerick with some of the guys who would have been in Singapore a couple of weeks before that. Mm. She does train with a really good squad. Her coach, John Saranic, he knows how to work her hard, and she loves the hard work. She loves PBing. She loves pushing herself. And the results are coming because of that. And it's a really, really exciting time because she's still so young. She's only just going to be stepping into her form now. So for her to come away with 5 for 5 from the first competition of the cycle, and then next year is Europeans, and the year after that will be the World Championships before the Games in LA. So I know she loves to be busy. She's also a student at the moment in UL as well. So she loves to be busy. She loves to show people what she's capable of. And she is determined. And that's kind of like what you need to be successful. And it's just such an exciting time to watch her.
Well, let's hear from her now. The Irish swimming sensation, Roisin Nureen.
Swimming. Roisin, how are you feeling? Five medals at the World Championships in Paris swimming. That must feel unbelievable.
Yeah, it does. It really, really does. You know, it feels like so long ago that we were over there, and it's only just a week since we've been back now. But I think I've had that time now over the last kind of week to be able to look back and reflect. I always think it's, you know, you can't really do that when you're in it, because it's, especially for me, I'm going from race to race to race. You know, it's, you're up on a high after winning a medal, and then you have to try bring it back down so quickly because you know you're up early the following morning or the next day. So it's only, I suppose, when I get to come home and get to spend time with my friends and my family and those who've supported me along the way, that's when it really kind of, that's when I get to reflect and look back and be so, so proud of what I was able to do over there.
You did just mention how busy a schedule it was, and obviously a very successful schedule, and keeping the focus. Like, how do you keep the focus? Like, you just said that so casually, you just need to like get back in the zone for the next one. But like, how do you keep the focus and make sure that the performances keep coming?
Yeah, I think it's definitely something that I've had to learn to do over the last couple of years. You know, I've always had a busy schedule, and it definitely is hard to keep the focus. It's definitely hard. I'm not a big fan of racing on the last day. You know, you can see everyone packing up around you, and you have to kind of keep your head in the game. So that one's always going to be a bit challenging. But I think other than that, it's just knowing that you still have to get back up for a race, and I suppose maintaining the discipline and being able to be happy and be in the moment, but then know that you have to come down from it quite quickly and reset again. And but I think for me, what kind of helps in that is, you know, I do a lot of different events. So, you know, I get to do one event, I get to do one stroke, but then the next day it's changing it up a little bit, doing something a bit different. And I think that really helps as well.
What was your favorite performance? Like, do you have a favorite performance? Do you have an event that you're most proud of?
Well, I would say my event has always kind of, since I was a kid, my event has always been 100 backstroke. For me this year, my backstroke hadn't been going very well. So to be able to come out and get a PB in that event, I was shocked to say the least. But I have to probably go back to day one. It was, fly for me was kind of a little thing that I took up, did put a bit more time into it. For me, it's always been just day one of a competition, kind of do the event to kind of blow the cobwebs out of the way. But I think this year we really put a focus on that event. So going into that event, I knew I could swim well. I had a lot of confidence going into it. And, you know, I was fourth in Paris. So I kind of wanted to, I suppose I wanted a bit of redemption, and I wanted to, that was the event the most that I really wanted on that podium. And to be able to, I've taken a good chunk of time off that event in the last year. So I've been really, really happy with how the event's gone. And I think, you know, for me, it'll definitely be a big focus point going forward. So that would probably be my standout swim, even though it wasn't necessarily my best medal colour. It was probably the event that meant the most to me to get on the podium.
I love the word you use there, redemption, because obviously I was in Paris with you and I watched you win multiple medals at the Paralympics in Paris last year, but there was also a few fourth place finishes. So I know how determined you are and how like much you would beat yourself up for those fourth place finishes. Do you think now having won five medals in five events, that is that gonna give a fire in your belly to continue that, or do you think you might need a little like knockdown to come back up, because you're so good at coming back up when you've been knocked down?
Yeah, I definitely think there's a bit of both there. You're absolutely right with I love fighting for something like that, and I don't love being fourth, no one loves being fourth, but I love the fight to try and get back up off that. And my both events that I was fourth in Paris were my day one and day two here, and I was able to get that one place higher than fourth. I was able to get on the podium for both of those. So, you know, that is what I love to do, and I love to fight that out, and kind of, I always say I use it as fuel. So I really do love that. But then I think, you know, as well, there's, when you're on the podium, like people say it's easy to get there, but you know, it's really, really hard to stay there. So I think that's the challenge over the next couple of years. And then I had some thirds and some seconds places. I'd love to, you know, be able to get a gold, hopefully, be it next year or in the next coming years, you know. So I think there's definitely a bit of both, you know, fighting to get there, but then also it's quite challenging to stay there as well. So that'll be kind of like the challenge, I suppose, over the next couple of years.
This year is obviously year one of the cycle, in the 4-year cycle leading into the Paralympic Games in LA. And you've started off so strongly with 5 for 5. Are you going to keep up the busy schedule? Is that the plan in the lead up to LA?
I definitely don't know is the answer. You know, this year, so in Paris, I swam 4 events, and this year I added back in the 400, and, you know, it went really, really well. I think I said in my post-race interview that like I'd been looking to go under 440 for since the Tokyo cycle now. So it's been a long time coming, but just to be able to see the progress in that event is really, really nice. And it's quite rewarding as well. You know, I've been trying for that for a while, even if I haven't swam it at all the major competitions. So, you know, we'll have to look at whether we keep that in the schedule coming into, you know, the next couple of competitions. You know, I'd like to think that we will. We have Europeans in this next year. So, you know, we'll use this year to kind of have a look at all that and, you know, see if we want to take out or add in anything else.
Obviously, Daryl Brady had an amazing championship as well, winning 2 medals. Did she come to you for any advice during the championships, or did you guys have a little conversation during the championships about like what it means to win a medal, or like how to prepare for like a medal ceremony? Because I know at times you and I had those conversations, and just like a little advice of like what to do with your hair.
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. I wasn't there for Dervla's medal that night, but I was watching it so intently. I was racing the following morning, so I obviously couldn't be at the pool. And I'd say I was shouting the absolute loudest at my laptop screen. I was absolutely over the moon for her, and seeing how much it meant for her to get on the podium at the world level for the first time was one of the most heartwarming things ever. It was so, so lovely. There's a video up on social media that honestly would melt anyone's heart. It's so lovely to see, you know, how much that meant to her. And I think, you know, definitely, as you said, there was those conversations beforehand about, you know, getting up and how excited we were, how nervous we were to get up and race. And, you know, even I said to her in the airport, I'm sure you know it well, but walking out in the airport afterwards and I said to her, I was like, you go first. I was like, this is for you. I did it last year. So little things like that. But no, she had an absolutely brilliant championship and delighted for her.
Obviously, it's been a really long season. So I need to know, like, are you having a break right now? Is there any plans for a holiday or anything?
Oh, God, it was the longest season ever. It actually wasn't. The season of Paris was actually technically, I think, a week longer. But, oh my goodness, this year felt so, so long. And I think, well, the reason why was because I suppose we finished so late. We were, 2 months? I had 8 weeks essentially training by myself with the coach or by myself with two coaches. Now, we did go on camp for 2 or 3 weeks of that, which helped so, so much. I always say that my favourite kilometre of swimming that I did over the 2 months was Barry and I got to swim together for like a single kilometre. And it was probably the most enjoyable bit of swimming I did in those 2 months. So yeah, it was definitely really, really challenging. And they were, I suppose, challenges that I didn't even realize at the start of the year, you know, that were going to be so hard. But, you know, the year is finally over. I was so, so happy to be done. And nothing, I'm not going on holidays. I'm back to college, back to reality. And that definitely brings you down pretty quickly. So I'm currently sitting in my college room, and I'm trying to catch up on all the work that I missed.
Oh my God, and your lecturers won't cut you some slack now.
No.
Okay, well, I think that you deserve a holiday because it has been a very long season, and I'm sure there's like a break for Halloween coming up with college soon, no?
Yeah, there probably is, and maybe we'll have a couple of plans, TBD, but we'll see, okay. We'll get away something.
Game on. Swimming.
The brilliant Roisin Nareen there speaking to our own Ellen Keane. You've been with us long enough now, we can say game on, Ellen Keane, at this stage. That interview in full will be podcasted, by the way. That was just part of the interview, a wee snippet of the interview. So 5 medals for Roisin Nareen. We had a couple of debutants, Deaton and Shewa for Team Ireland. Barry McClements obviously is another star of Team Ireland. But Dervla Brady collected silver in the S6 50 metre butterfly and bronze in the S6 50 metre freestyle. Another rising star or current star?
Rising star. Yeah, okay. Dervla is just so interesting because she only kind of came onto the scene, onto the team in 2023 at the World Championships she debuted. And she's always been like, because watching her train, she loves swimming fast. Like, she loves swimming fast so much. If she could just sprint all the time, she would. But to be a swimmer, like, swimming competitions are long. You need to be able to go from heats to finals. You need that fitness. So what Dervla has been working on over the past couple of years has been the fitness element of it. So she's always had that speed, but it's to be able to finish strong. And I think we're just starting to see the results of that now. And it's so exciting because it has only been a couple of years. And the time that she swam to win the silver medal in the butterfly was 35.61. Now, Nicole Turner, who won a silver medal in Tokyo, she went to 36.3.
Okay.
So like, And Nicole would have always been that little bit faster than Dervla. So to see how fast Dervla went, like, it was unbelievable for anyone who follows para swimming and knows para swimming. Like, all of us were just, obviously we were so proud of her, but we were just so shocked at the time that she went, because like, we knew that she was capable of swimming that fast, but we didn't know that it would happen this soon. So I really, really hope that she takes great confidence from that. I think that's kind of why she probably swam so fast, because she did win the bronze medal a few days earlier in the 50 freestyle. So I think that maybe had given her a little bit of confidence. Roisin talked about her interview and just how sweet it was and how genuine it was, in terms of like, this really means a lot to her. And like, Dervla loved performing, so it was just so heartwarming to see.
Okay, very briefly, Ellen, as well, we mentioned yesterday 3-time Olympian Shane Ryan announced his retirement from competitive swimming. How will he be remembered for Irish swimming?
Do you know what? Shane Ryan has always been a superstar of Irish swimming. He's always been such a role model. Not only is he a great swimmer, but he's a great personality, and he has so much time for kids. He's been doing the workshops, but now he's gone home back to America. He's made this decision, and do you know what? I think all of the swimming community in Ireland just wish him the best, because he has done just such a good job as an ambassador for Irish swimming.
Brilliant. Ellen Kane, thank you for detailing all of that. That is all we have time for this evening. Thank you for listening. I'll be back here tomorrow from 6 p.m. in the company of Bernard Jackman, looking ahead to the weekend's URC action. Alan Colley chats football and Jeff Shepherd rounds up the latest NFL news. Today's show was produced by Ronan Lawler. Our broadcast coordinator was Jarla Holland. Up next, after we check in with the news desk, is the new music show, Better the Silver, from all of the Game On team. Have a great evening. Bye-bye.
This is 2FM.